720 WGN. Hello there, it's Amy Guth. How's it going, everybody? It's a totally different time than I'm ever on, and I'm so glad to be here this day before Thanksgiving. I love the eve of a holiday, right? I love the day before because everybody's just dying to get into that holiday mode, but you can't do it yet. You still got to work. You still got to do some stuff. You got to run errands, go to the store, get food ready for all the people coming to your house, all those things. So, but there's this feeling people are starting to get the holiday day, which I love. So there's that feeling. But some of my neighbors, they are real gung-ho. I got to tell you, they are so gung-ho. They were like putting out the Christmas lights and all the inflatable giant snowmen and toy soldiers in the yard. I was like, I don't know. This is probably a longer conversation for the next hour when we have a little more time to talk about it. But, you know, I don't know. What are your thoughts here? Because I feel like let's do one holiday at a time before we, you know, I mean, you know how it is. You walk into the drugstore in September and you've got Halloween and Christmas stuff up. So I'm not talking about retail. I'm just talking about our houses. Do you think Thanksgiving is too soon to put up your holiday decor? I feel like put it up when it's, because there's logistics to work around, right? If you got a warm weekend, go for it. Don't wait for it to be cold, and then it's a terrible pain in the butt to put up your decorations. I don't know. I feel like put them up if you want to, but you don't have to light them.
Yeah, I agree with that. I definitely try to put my decorations up as soon as I can, but I don't always light them. But lately, I haven't been even plugging in my decorations to have them light up. I just feel like it adds on to my bill. And it's a lot of cords to work with to even get everything.
So you don't light it at all?
Yeah, no. Last year when I did my Christmas decorations, I didn't plug them in at all to light.
You know what? I have a friend who did, who had a tree last or 2 years ago, and she just made like little white and gold and silver origami animals and put them all over the tree. And it was absolutely beautiful because she had the same thought that you did. She was like, I don't want to, you know, I don't need, it's not an essential type of electricity. I don't want to mess with that.
Right.
So I thought that it was very beautiful.
Yeah,
very
but that
simple.
Seems like a lot of work.
Well, there's that.
Origami.
That's true.
Doing I hear a lot that of work. Word and I go, no, not me. I can't do it.
I can make three. I can make the swan. I can make the little box.
Oh, good for you.
And I can make a cat. Not very well.
I can take a piece of paper and get a star for you.
Oh,
that's
okay.
That's about it.
I can make a paper airplane.
There you go. I'm not good at. I can make them, but I can't make them fly.
There's that. No, no.
They can't actually fly. So there's that.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of decorations up already.
A lot.
Outside. Because I think we have that 1 week less between Christmas and Thanksgiving. So a lot of people put them up early because they knew the weather was going to get bad. And, you know, there's not a lot of time this year.
Yeah.
I'm starting
to panic.
Right now,
the weather is just too unpredictable. Like, you don't know if it's going to freeze over tomorrow or rain tomorrow to make the ground wet again.
I know. That's the thing. So I talked to one neighbor who was like, well, I don't know what's going to happen. And I feel like it's dry and sunny right now. So I'm doing this. I'm going for it. So this neighbor has had quite an impressive array of holiday decor. I mean, there's an inflatable tree, an inflatable Santa, an inflatable snowman, some toy soldiers, tinsel lights. I mean, I'm like, do you have anything left in your attic? Right. There it is. It's a lot. There's a lot going on there. And the next neighbor always puts up a light up. It's Ralphie from Christmas Story with the pink bunny suit on, but it's a life size and it's light up.
Oh, that's hilarious.
It's so
funny. Where does one even find that?
I have no idea where you find that. This neighbor
does
also.
Does he have the lamp in the window too?
Right. I need the lamp to be in the
window. I've seen the lamp.
Yeah.
I've seen the lamp before for sale, but I've never seen a life size Ralphie. So you kind of do a double take when you walk by it. You're
like
it's Ralphie in the pink bunny suit.
I like it. That's my favorite Christmas movie.
It's
like, I love
so
they put
funny.
It on the loop.
I know, I love the loop of it. And that's, I feel like that and Raising Arizona are the two movies that I think I know every word of by heart.
Yeah.
Just because those are the ones that, you know, that are always just kind of randomly on.
Or Home Alone.
Home Alone's
Home
a good
Alone's
one.
Always on.
That's
always
a good one.
And
I like
Elf.
Polar Express.
I've never seen that.
Really?
No.
It's
kind of
dark,
Express.
Isn't it?
Is it?
I don't know. The characters creep me out the way they move on Polar Express.
The characters are a little creepy. The
guys
that
animation.
Give out the hot chocolate, they're a bit much.
Yeah.
But it's,
okay, now I've got to watch this. It's kind of weird.
It creeps me out.
The one I never know when to watch is Nightmare Before Christmas because it's both. So I try to watch a lot of horror movies in October leading up to Halloween. So that's usually the one that I'm like, okay, I'll watch that in November because there's inevitably I don't
it's
get
in between.
Yeah, it's an in-between. It's an in-between.
For sure.
My daughter's favorite movie.
It's so fun.
Loves that movie.
I mean, I do sing along. I'm not going to lie. I sing along. I know all the words. I may or may not own the soundtrack.
This is Halloween.
And no, it's so catchy and cute. It's adorable. Between that and Baby Shark, I've always got one of those songs in my head lately.
That's fair. Baby Shark is definitely a bop.
Don't say it. I know. I was just reminded of, it's just about a month old, but CNN has video of this, of there was a protest happening in Lebanon, and this woman and her tiny toddler were trying to drive through the area, and there was a protest going on, and the protesters realized the child was frightened, and so they all started singing Baby Shark to him.
That is the cutest thing
it's
ever.
Really, it's like, okay, there's humanity going on, and you know, even in places torn with strife, there's a lot going on. All right, well, you know what? We got to take a little break, but there's a lot going on this show today. We've got Heather Sharon is coming in. She is the managing editor and City Hall reporter from the Daily Line. We're going to talk about some of those top big political stories locally here, state and city, that we just can't forget as 2019 rolled on, and the big stories she's going to be looking at the year ahead. But before that, we're going to be talking with the folks from Wisco Pop. It is a craft soda. They're based right here in the Midwest, and they're going to be talking about some holiday drink recipes for us, boozy and non-boozy, so everybody gets a little something. So we'll take a break, and we'll get to all that good stuff back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. All right, Amy Guth here with you till 12 o'clock, doing all the things. We're looking back today, right? You know, it's that time of year where you kind of look back at what happened this year and what's happening in the year ahead. So coming up after the 10:30 news, we're going to be talking with Heather Sharon, who is going to be talking us through some of the big political news stories of the year and what she'll be watching in the year ahead. But right now, we're joined by Austin Ashley, who is the founder of Wisco Pop. Austin, thanks so much for being with us today.
No, you bet. Thanks for having me, Amy.
Gladly. So, you know what? I think we talked years ago on the phone when Wisco Pop was a very, very new brand, but now I see it everywhere. You're doing all the things. You have all kinds of flavors and doing all sorts of stuff with it, including some cool recipes for holiday drinks. Talk me through that.
That's awesome. We've grown significantly, like you pointed out, and we also have not just sodas, but we also have sparkling waters made from real fruit juice now. And you were mentioning the cocktails, right?
Yes.
So this holiday season, we've been putting little cocktail cards in all of our four packs that we're putting on the store shelves for people to make drinks with. So you can make like a Moscow Mule with our ginger beer, or if you're looking for something light calorie, then you could use our Sparkle, which we've got like a fizzy ginger gin drink on there.
Nice. And you know, I gotta say, it's the grapefruit one that won me. I'm grapefruit anything. I was like, oh man, that's so good.
Yeah, that one's got Texas Ruby Red grapefruit juice in it. And you know, that just has such a nice rounded flavor. It's not just completely obliterating bitter. And that's my favorite to eat.
Nice. So which one, what should I make with that one? For drinks, maybe people coming by that drink or maybe that don't drink?
Yeah, we suggest the Paloma. I mean, yeah, like you said, for people who don't drink, I mean, we're seeing like that's the trend, right? A lot of people are into non-alcoholic beverages. You know, we don't put any additives or preservatives, so it's just like something you made at home. But if you're going to make a drink, I suggest using our grapefruit soda and making a Paloma. So that would have tequila, cilantro, jalapeno, and then salted rim.
I'm into that. I can do that. Maybe I could just start that today. It's almost a holiday. It's fine.
Yeah, super. That would be the way to get started.
Nice. And so tell me about the subscription service that you offer. I think that is so interesting. I love the subscription box space. I love subscription services. I just think that's such an interesting development that we've seen over the last few years with different products. But that's a thing people can just get delivered to their house.
Yeah, for sure. We kind of put that on the website, particularly so because people really enjoy our ginger lime sparkling water, and that's the one that people mostly sign up for the subscription service. We started that probably about two months ago, so you don't have to run to the store. You know, shipping's pretty cheap.
I just have to worry about my neighbors stealing it off my doorstep. That's a thing in my neighborhood. You can't get any packages delivered. They'll steal my Wisco Pop.
Maybe you need to move to Viroqua where it's easy.
So you're based right there in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So a Midwestern brand, which I love talking with Midwestern brands because we often think of, you know, the big, the big coast of that's where you go for all the things. But no, there's so much cool stuff right here. So I love talking with local brands. How did your brand start? Remind everybody of that story.
Yeah, and you know, just also to say, we live in Viroqua, Wisconsin, which is a town of about 5,000 people, and we moved here to this little small community because we thought it was like kind of a fun, simple life here, and they have really cool educational options. But so at the same time, there's not a whole lot of work here. So I decided to start my own beverage company. I thought, oh, I could go to farmer's market and get a, you know, cause job, you know, like a job here, you're lucky to make like $10 an hour, on somebody who's not, skilled. Okay. So I decided to start my own business because I thought, well, I can make $10 an hour on my own. That's pretty simple. And so that's what I did. And I think I made more than $10 an hour this year, so that's good.
Nice, good. Well, I love your bio on the website. It remains one of my favorite bios because it opens with this sentence. Austin's culinary adventure started in 1998 when he got fired from a landscaping job for doing wheelies in a case loader. Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah. Yep, I've always kind of been a fun seeker. I've always surfed and, you know, like 4x4 trucks and all that kind of stuff. So it kind of made a lot of sense to get fired for something like that.
Going out and doing the thing he loved.
Yeah, or doing something somebody's. Yeah, I like to have fun.
Sure. So where can people go to find out more about Wisco Pop and connect with you on social media and all that good stuff?
Yeah, to find Wisco Pop and Sparkle, our sparkling waters made from real fruits, you would go to WiscoPopSoda.com, and you can find us on Instagram underneath Wisco Pop and Facebook underneath Wisco Pop.
No Twitter.
What is that?
Exactly. What is Twitter? Who plays with Twitter anymore besides me? Good time.
I'm so sorry. I could only handle so many things at a time. Two social medias was enough.
And Twitter's kind of a you know, a fire
hose. You really keep up at it when you're going to Twitter.
You do. And even when you're not, you got to keep up with it. That's a thing. All right. Well, everybody, you heard the man. Head to WiscoPopSoda.com. Find Wisco Pop on Instagram and Facebook. Don't even mess with Twitter. Just go to Facebook and Instagram. Find those things. Well, Austin, thanks so much. And what are you going to be? What is the Wisco Pop beverage concoction that you have with Thanksgiving dinner tomorrow?
Well, I'm making some test batches right now of a sparkling water that's got ginger, lime, and hops in it, Centennial hops. Mm. And then we're going to have a leg of lamb that I'm going to roast, and then I'm making a demi-glace to go over that leg of lamb.
Great. What time should I be there?
Well, it's going to take you at least 5 hours to get here, so start driving.
Okay, sounds good. See you tomorrow.
All right. Thanks so much for your time, Amy.
Thanks so much, Austin. Happy Thanksgiving.
Adios.
All right. See, there you go. I love talking about local brands and just cool, fun, nice people doing things locally. Talked to them a long time ago on the Wintrust Business Lunch. So it's cool to update and kind of follow along with that brand and see what they're up to. And I'm not on the take from them for real. I've gotten nothing for free, but I'm telling you that grapefruit stuff has got crack cocaine in it because it's delicious. It's so good. And I do not drink soda. I really don't. So I was like, oh, these people came on. I saw that brand. I'm going to try. And I was like, what is this? Sorcery in a bottle. It's delicious. So anyway, give that a try. And like you said, there's some recipes in the 4-packs, all that good stuff. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. We're going to get you to news, all those good things. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Heather Sharon, who is the managing editor and city hall reporter for the Daily Line. We're going to be talking about the big local political stories that we just can't forget, even if we might want to. And we'll do a look ahead for 2020. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. All right, that was a short break. So let's come right back and talk about more things. Heather's on her way up, I'm sure. So here in just a bit on the other side of the news break, we'll talk with Heather about those political stories I was just talking about. But then after that, we have another guest coming in, and that's Dalton Barker, who's a reporter from Crain's Chicago Business. You might have heard some conversations I've had with him on Crain's Daily Gist, which is a podcast I do every day for Crain's Chicago Business. And Dalton covers a lot of things, but among them, the food and beverage industry. So we're going to be talking about about kind of those big food and beverage stories of 2019 and what he's going to be looking at for the year ahead. My guess on that is that we cannot get through that list without talking about chicken sandwich wars.
You absolutely cannot. The Popeye's chicken sandwich took over my timeline for at least a month and a half.
Have you had one? I haven't had one.
No, because I don't like mayo, so there's no point in me having it.
Is there mayo on it?
Yeah, it's like some spice. It's like this special spicy mayo that's on it.
Oh, well, so you're okay.
Yeah, but the sandwich was out like for months before it picked up so much traction.
There was a Popeye's near my house, near-ish, like in my neighborhood, and every time I went by it, I was like, there are people camping outside of a Popeye's.
Yes.
What's happening?
Yes.
So I think we're definitely going to talk about the plant-based meat stuff or non-meat, right? Like the Impossible Whopper. There's one in the Thompson Center, and every time I've walked by there, there's like a handwritten sign on a piece of cardboard that says, no Impossible Whopper, don't ask. And it's like duct taped to the side.
All right.
So I've never had one of those. I have had the meatless White Castle.
And how'd that go?
You know what? It was good. I didn't know that's what it was.
Actually,
the White Castle people had a lot of stuff here. They brought it here for, I don't know what show they brought it for, but they brought it. So, you know, there's a bunch in the green room, and I was like, free food at work. I'm doing this.
Absolutely.
And I had one, and I was like, oh, what flavor is this one? And then I found out it was that burger. So there's that. Anyway, we're going to be talking about that later in the 11 o'clock hour, but lots of things. For now, it is time for news, so let's do that. 720 WGN, hey there, it's Amy Guth. I'm here with you until noon, filling in. You know, I love holiday fill-ins because it's just kind of a, you know, you just go with it, and you just go, I want to talk about anything I want. And the other thing I love doing on holiday fill-in time, is you get to say, what happened this year? And so, who did I bring in but Heather Sharon? She is the managing editor and City Hall reporter at the Daily Line. You know her. You've read her stuff. Hi, welcome.
I'm thrilled to be here.
I'm so glad that you're here. I'm glad you didn't get blown away on your way here. It's very windy outside.
Oh my God, I was not prepared for it at all.
None of us are. There were flower pots blowing around my neighborhood this morning, so it's a free-for-all out there. Well, I appreciate you coming in. Okay, so when we are thinking, and now I can't, first of all, I can't believe it's almost December.
Correct.
It still feels like we're just getting into this year, because it just flew on by.
Yes, it did.
That's a thing. But also, you know, this time of year, you kind of look back and go, okay, what happened this year? What are those big stories? And you've been super busy.
This past year has been approximately the length of a decade. Give or take.
Felt like a second,
yes.
And also a decade at the same time. That's exactly right. I mean, I think if we're looking local, we have to start with Lightfoot and the budget.
That's right.
Because that's been such a big topic since the minute she walked in the door, is what is she going to do?
And this is really sort of the end of the beginning of the Lightfoot administration. Mm. This, in addition to the teacher strike, was really sort of the sort of big challenges she faced when she walked into City Hall. And so we sort of know a little bit better what the city's financial outlook for the next year is. There are still a lot of unknowns, which is unusual for the day after the budget has been passed.
Sure. And so what, you know, for people who are not perhaps following it as closely as you are, you know, why is
you
that?
You mean obsessed? Is that what you're saying?
Obsessed and basically yes. Living at City Hall. Why would you say that is? What's different about this administration in that way?
So the city had an $838 million budget shortfall. And to put that in context, it is $200 million bigger than the deficit Rahm Emanuel faced when he took office. So this is a challenge of historic proportions. And she's filling it not with the three usual options. So just like you or I in balancing our checkbook, we've really got three options. You can either make more money, cut spending, or borrow money.
Mm-hmm.
And she's doing certainly all three of those things, but she's also refinancing $1.3 billion in city debt to save $210 million next year. Now, the city's going to count all those savings next year, but those savings won't actually materialize for more than a decade. So we're sort of banking, you know, savings before they actually materialize. And that is a bet that the stock market continues to rise and that we don't slide as an economy into a recession and interest rates get a little bit wonky. So that's a big gamble. The other thing is that the city is still waiting for approximately $163 million from the federal government to reimburse the city for ambulance rides for people who are poor and indigent and qualify for federal aid. So we had been told that that money would be coming by the end of November. Well,
here we are.
Yeah. And so everybody yesterday was a little bit like, we're approving this budget, but maybe we're going to have to come back and figure out what to do if this doesn't materialize, because who has to sign off on this? Oh, the Trump administration, who is not maybe the biggest fan of Chicago political leadership.
Sure.
Donald Trump. So there's still a lot of questions.
Indeed. Yeah. I mean, when I saw that story pop up yesterday, okay, it's gotten the okay, like it cleared the thing, it's fine. It was such a short story. Every version of it, every outlet had a really short, like, here's what we know, here's what we got. It was, and I knew, okay, some things, there still must be so much that's up in the air.
Well, then you should subscribe to the Daily Line.
Exactly
and
right.
And we will, you know, break it all down for you.
That's exactly right.
And so what's interesting is there were 11 no votes. 2 votes came from Alderman Ray Lopez and Alderman Anthony Beal, who are sort of the old guard part of the city council who have been really at loggerheads with Mayor Lightfoot since the day she was elected.
That's right.
But the other 9 votes came from the city council's progressive caucus.
And mostly new
right.
members. Yeah.
Right. 8 of those votes came from rookies. And that is, I think, going to be really her big challenge for 2020 is how does she govern as a progressive? Because she says she's a progressive. She called this budget a progressive blueprint for 2020. How does she govern facing her strongest opposition from the city council's progressive caucus? And not just progressives, but members of the Democratic Socialists of America who really want to turn the ship of Chicago to be sort of more inclusive and to, you know, tax the wealthy and to provide more robust safety net services in terms of mental health care and affordable housing, and to really change the way the police department operates. So these are big, you know, things that everybody's trying to do.
These will be big things to navigate in the year ahead, for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
So we'll have to see that. I mean, I'm kind of mentally making my list of what are the big things to watch in the year ahead. That's certainly one of them.
Right.
You know, I think another one is, as we're, you know, it's all tied together, of course, so closely, but Eddie Johnson's retirement, what happens there in the year ahead of who's coming in, what's happening, what that's going to look like, what the culture will be that person sets.
So we know a little bit about what's going to happen after January 1st. Charlie Beck, the former Los Angeles Police Department chief, will be the interim superintendent, and he has said that he will carry on Eddie Johnson's legacy while overseeing the implementation of the consent decree and reforms, and he has experiences in that in Los Angeles. What's interesting is that nobody I talk to at City Hall is really taking his promise not to seek the job on a permanent basis at face value. Because why would you move to Chicago?
Why would you do that?
Right. So he says his wife has put the kibosh on it. They're not moving to Chicago. It's too cold. I imagine he would say it is too windy today. And that they're going to launch a national search for a new superintendent. But it's not like you or I could be the next superintendent of police.
Right.
It is a very small group of people who are qualified to lead such a huge organization facing such huge challenges. So that, I think, will really consume at least the first several months of 2020.
Certainly. Certainly. I think also tied in with budget is a big part of the conversation that we've been having. Two things that keep, you know, as you look back through, I looked back through, what did I tweet this year? What was on the news sites that I look at this year? The reporters that I follow, what did they write about this year? I was kind of looking back through all that. And the things that kept coming up again and again and again and again and again were about wage and about Uber.
Yes.
Over and over. And both of those so tied to budget as well.
Yes. So it is going to be more expensive to hop in an Uber or a Lyft downtown or to get downtown. The budget includes tripling of taxes on single rides to and from the downtown and near North Side and the West Loop. And what we will have to see is whether that tax stands up in court. Uber is already suing Skokie, which has a similar sort of surcharge. And if that suit goes their way, I imagine you will see them sue the city on similar reasoning. What's interesting is that our mayor is, as she said yesterday, a 30-year litigator. And she said to Uber, if you think you've got a court case to make, bring it on. So that's interesting. But for many years during the Emanuel administration, she said that Uber and Lyft were sort of allowed to run rampant and sort of clog the downtown with all of these cars. They would circle looking for their pickup and whatnot. So it will be interesting to see if, as this tax goes into effect, at least in the early months, does congestion get better downtown, or does it not really have any effect? So that's also, I think, will be a big story as well.
Indeed. We're talking with Heather Sharone right now. She's the managing editor and City Hall reporter at the Daily Line. You should subscribe to that. There's tons of information. At the very least, get the newsletter. You'll learn a lot just from the newsletter. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to keep talking about the big stories of 2019 and the big stories that she'll be watching in 2020. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, it's Amy Guth with you until 12 o'clock noon. And then we turn it over to who's in? Who's happening? What's happening today at 12? I don't even know.
I have no idea.
The holiday schedule is always fascinating because you never know who's going to pop in the door after you. You're
it's like a great surprise. It's like a Christmas gift every
time
you
tune in. Behind door number one is, oh, it's that person. Cool. Well, looking forward to talking with whoever is on at 12, that's for sure. In the meantime, we have Heather Sharone in the studio. She is the managing editor and City Hall reporter at the Daily Line, to which I hope you are subscribing, and I hope you are getting the newsletters because it's full of great information every single day. Tons of good stuff. If you want to feel like you're up on all the knowledge, because it's a fire hose out there.
It really is.
Let's not lie. It is a fire hose of information. If you like scroll through Twitter, you're like, well, I want to go back to bed. And this is a wonderfully curated, like, here's what you need to know. Not a lot of nonsense. Just here are the facts. Here's the stuff.
So we are anti-nonsense at the Daily Line. I feel very confident in saying
that. That should be on your business card. Hi, I'm anti-nonsense. I like that. Okay, well, we've been talking about the big stories of 2019. And, of course, the big ones you're going to be watching in 2020. We started down the path of talking about wage, which is one, I know I've talked about that many times. To this day, one of the most violent reactions I've ever gotten from listeners is I did a 2-hour special about the wage gap. You'd think I set the building on fire. People were very uncomfortable talking about that topic. So it is no surprise that when minimum wage gets discussed, especially when we start talking about tipped workers, lots of feelings there, big time.
So the mayor's budget means that the Chicago minimum wage will rise to $15 an hour by 2021. That is faster than anywhere else in the state of Illinois, which will have a $15 minimum wage in 2025. What the budget doesn't include is an end to the tipped wage. And for those of you who sort of don't understand how it works, it's a little complicated. So if you are a server or somebody who gets tips, your employer can pay you right now $6.40 an hour. Now, they're required to ensure that the tips you get bring you up to the minimum wage, which is $13 an hour right now, so that you're not working for less than the minimum wage. However, several aldermen, including Sophia King of the 4th Ward and Sue Sedlowski-Garza of the 10th Ward, wanted to end that minimum, that tipped minimum wage, and to basically require everybody to be paid $15 an hour by 2021, and then tips would be on top of that. That was vociferously opposed by the Restaurant Association, as well as Mayor Lightfoot and other aldermen who said it would really throw the whole system into chaos. Now, opponents of the tipped minimum wage say it invites harassment, it invites racism, and it really keeps people, and by people I mean mostly women of color, sort of mired in poverty. And there have been lots of studies that showed that, you know, sure, there are bad actors out there, but if you know that you've got to sort of flirt and be nice.
Make nice with a table. Absolutely. Right. I mean, I think all of us have worked in food service at some point. I've been in that position where you're like, oh, these people are drunk and they're obnoxious. They were drunk when they sat down. They were creepy or whatever is going on. You're like, but if I say, hey, don't do that, don't talk that way, they're going to say, there goes your tip. And then you're making, you know, at the time, you know, just a couple of dollars an hour.
Right. So they really wanted to end that. That didn't happen. However, there is money in the budget for a feasibility study that would sort of seek to put some facts on the ground for people to sort of revisit this. But it was an interesting sort of microcosm debate over what actually is progressive. Progressive is one of those words that means a lot of things to a lot of different people. And what Mayor Lightfoot said was progressive wasn't actually what other aldermen said was progressive. And what was interesting was that when she got up to say she would vote for the budget, Sue Sedlowski-Garza, who's a member of the Chicago Teachers Union, she's a huge union supporter. Her dad was a labor icon in the steel mills or the, you know, the, and on the Southwest side. And she said, look, this is a half a loaf. We're not getting everything we want. But I will happily eat this half a loaf because it's more than we have right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think,
that's a powerful thing to say.
It is just sort of a microcosm of the debate that I think is going to be facing the city. And we sort of struggle to figure out, what does this post Rahm Emanuel new progressive Chicago look like?
Yeah, it will be interesting. I think, you know, obviously, when we look ahead to 2020, a lot is going to happen on January 1st. Here's this moment. We're talking about casinos. We're talking about cannabis, legalizing it for recreational use. You know, I was talking with John Pletz from Crain's yesterday, and he made a really excellent point, because Crain's Forum is kind of taking this deep dive look at that of, you know, it's not just January 1st that we need to be looking at. We also need to be looking at May 1st, when the new licenses are issued, to see if that social equity applicant piece actually worked, which is very interesting for 2020.
Because right now, the only people who are going to be able to sell recreational marijuana on January 1st are the people who had licenses to sell medical marijuana. And by and large, those are large firms owned by white men.
Yes.
And that was explicitly not what state lawmakers wanted to happen when they created this bill. So there's a move among the Chicago City Council's Black Caucus to delay sale of marijuana in Chicago until July 1st, because that equity piece just isn't in there yet. I don't think there's a real shot of them sort of making that happen in the next 40 days, less than 40 days. But it gives you a sense of how angry a lot of people are, that this is sort of starting out not where a lot of people want it to be in terms of benefiting Black and brown Chicagoans who really suffered under the war on drugs and were disproportionately impacted by prohibition, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting that word has resurfaced around this. You know, people have said, you know, even in the road to legalizing recreational marijuana, the word kept being, we've shown, it's been proven out that prohibition doesn't work. Let's do something else, which I think is so interesting to see that word make this resurgence, especially here.
Right. Yeah.
So it'll be very interesting to see what happens there. It'll be interesting. I agree with you. I don't think much will happen in 40 days to delay that. You know, we are starting off with a very uneven playing field. It's not going to be a level playing field, but it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it's an interesting moment, right? Because we've seen a lot of things that were taboo for a long time shifting. We've seen, you know, this new attitude around sports wagering. We've seen recreational marijuana. We've seen this movement here and nationally, even, where attitudes are shifting around things that 10 years ago, no way could we have had those conversations.
Absolutely. So it's really become sort of an accepted fact that this Chicago is going to have a casino at some point in 2020, 2021. And that was really sort of a source of huge debate for many, many years. Mayor Rahm Emanuel opposed it. Governor Pat Quinn, when he was in office, he also opposed it. Didn't go anywhere under former Governor Bruce Rauner. So it's really a new era where the city has sort of said, look, we need this revenue. This is a revenue source. Why not take advantage of it? Mm-hmm. And we're also going to see a big fight next year, whether they're going to change the law that sort of sets up a Chicago casino, how it's taxed, whether it will be financially feasible. And then, of course, the $64 billion question is, where does it go? Does it go downtown? Does it go in the neighborhoods? Does it go on the south or the west side as an economic development attempt? There's just a huge amount of unknown questions there.
Yeah, there's a lot. We got a lot to do in the
yes,
year ahead. That's going to be a thing.
I'm already exhausted.
I know. I was going to say, I'm sorry that you got no rest in 2019, because I don't think 2020 will be much better or more restful for you. Well, thank you so much. Heather Sharone is the managing editor and City Hall reporter at The Daily Line, which you should be following. Thank you so much for being with us today.
I was thrilled to be here.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy
However
Thanksgiving.
You celebrate the day, I hope that you...
Stuffing.
I hope
a
that you have a day
of
off. Is what I
do have a day off.
I hope there is no news for you to have to deal with. All right, well, we're going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff, back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. Watching texts and watching tweets this morning. And so if you are looking for links to any of the stuff that I've mentioned on the show so far, or will mention in the next hour in the future, just follow me on Twitter. I'm at Amy Guth, G-U-T-H on Twitter. And I will tweet out the links to everything I talked about today after the show, a little bit later this afternoon. So you can find all that stuff, because people are going, well, I Googled, I don't find, it's fine. I got you. Don't worry. I got you. So coming up in the next hour, I would like to know, what is the thing that is like the non-traditional piece of Thanksgiving food that you must eat? Some people are like, I have to wake up that morning and have a bowl of Fruit Loops, then I can have my traditional thing. lots of people have lots of traditions. Some people are like, I have all the regular stuff, the green bean casserole, the sweet potatoes, the mashed potatoes, the turkey, the cranberry, the this, but then I always got to put in this. So I want to know, what is that extra thing that makes your Thanksgiving super special? I want to hear from you on that. 312-981-7200. We'll be talking about that after the news. And we'll be talking with Dalton Barker from Crain's Chicago Business, who covers the food and beverage world there, about the big stories of 2019. WGN. It's Amy Guth with you till noon. That's a blast from the past, DJ Cash.
Can I do what I can?
I haven't listened to Weird Al in a minute.
Yeah, same. I thought about it because I knew what you were going to talk about, and I'm like, what's a song that relates to what people eat?
Good job. Nicely done.
Thank you.
So that's my question. My question to everyone is this. Let's get some callers going. Let's have a talk here. And that is, every family has their one food that they add to a, I'm going to do a radio air quotes here, traditional Thanksgiving dinner, because that means something for everybody, right?
Right.
I mean, in the Guth family, although I would like to make a sidebar, this year for the first time, we are all going to be under the same roof for this holiday for the first time in 21 years.
How do you feel about that?
We like each other. It's not that we don't like each other.
Right.
We just, you got one kid in radio, you got another kid who's a scientist off doing the things, saving the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then my dad was in the restaurant industry, so it never lined up.
Right.
And then we all moved to different corners of the world, so, you know. So it's going to be awesome. I kind of can't believe it till we're all sitting there. Then I'm going to be like, wow, holy moly.
Right.
That is neither here nor there. I'm sure I'll be putting things on you know, social media about
it. I'm very excited to read this. It's either going to go really, really well, or you're going to just sit there and be like, wow,
going to jail.
I could do another 21 years without doing this again. So
right. See, we'll see how this goes. 21 more years. Peace out. Right. Who knows how it's going to go, but I think it's going to be a worthy experiment. It'll be fun to do that. So we don't even have a tradition anymore, right? Because I'm like, we haven't done this in so long.
Right.
But one year, my mom, my brother was a baby, and she was, you know, he was a tiny baby, and he was like colicky and crying and just really having a rough time, and he was teething, like all this stuff was happening. And she was like cooking all the stuff for Thanksgiving. My dad was at the restaurant doing Thanksgiving service there, and it all burned. She was like, you know, he boiled the tops of bottles, like all this is happening. It was just chaos. And it burned. And so she just kind of was crying. She's like, I can't, I'm overwhelmed. And my dad was like, I got this. So after he was finished, he brought home some Thanksgiving leftovers from work. But then he said, we're going to do something different. And we like went to, he said, we're going to go find something open. And we found a hot dog stand open on Thanksgiving night. And we sat there and we ate hot dogs. So it's not as much as we eat them as we like to tell that story.
Right.
Even it's just to each other over the phone for the last 21 years.
I love it. I like that story.
That's what we do. So there's that. But what about in your family, in your household, is there an extra dish that you add to the mix?
So there's a dish that I add to the mix that no one else really goes crazy over.
More for you. That's
so,
okay.
Exactly. So being in like a biracial family, you know, my white side makes stuffing. However, I went to a soul food restaurant a couple years ago and I got to experience dressing.
Yes.
And it's completely different dishes.
It is different.
So every Thanksgiving, I am struggling to get dressing because no one in my family knows how to make it. So I'm calling all of my friends like, hey, whose mom made a ton of stuffing or dressing rather? And I can get a pan. So this year, I reached out to a very far relative to ask if they could make me a special pan of dressing.
And it's going
to
happen.
So now this year, I can actually bring a pan of dressing.
You've got your dressing.
And if no one else eats it, that's perfectly fine.
It's delicious.
Right. I'm just going to bring it this year because they keep saying that I'm selfish every other year. So,
rude. Watch out. You're going to stay away for 21 years.
I know. Yeah. Basically, that might be my next move. Then I'll be saying, I haven't seen my family in 21 years for her Thanksgiving dinner.
I know, right? Right. Well, you know, so I have a friend that she kind of felt a little bit of conflict about the, you know, she was like, I don't want to not do Thanksgiving because it is a time of sitting around a table and giving thanks. And I like that. But the origins.
Right. Origins are terrible.
Yeah. She said, and that's making me uncomfortable. I don't really know how to navigate this. So what she does is she added she found a soup that is from like Seminole Native American tradition, and it is delicious. So she has this soup that she adds. She's like, so this is a Native American type of soup that's traditional, that's still served all the time this time of year. So that's, I mean, she's like, that doesn't make up for colonizing and genocide. However, you know, she wants to kind of give,
like, pay homage.
Yeah.
So I love that.
She added that. So that's the first course, is this like Seminole type of soup that's served at the harvest time. It's wow. delicious. It's really good.
Let me ask you this. What time do you guys usually eat? Like, are you like early dinner type of people?
Well, if I recall 21 years ago, well, here's what I've been doing for the last 21 years. What I've been doing is there are so many wonderful places that serve Thanksgiving meals around mm-hmm. the city. The Greater Chicago Food Depository is in touch with a lot of organizations. I know I've had them on the show many times. So they do it. But there's also just almost every neighborhood. You probably don't even know it, but there is one. So I ended up at this one. It's on the north side. And there are people experiencing homelessness there. There are people that are just don't have anywhere to be, that just don't have family. There are people that are, you know, elderly people on a fixed income. They don't have the means to get extra food. And so it is a lovely community time. And so I usually go and do that in the morning, and there's 40 people there cooking, and you know, you serve people and you wait on them and you fill their drinks and you pour coffee and bring them dessert, and it feels good to kind of pamper people that maybe wouldn't get that the rest of the year, right? And this is a kitchen that's open all the time, but that's where I landed that one Thanksgiving. And so I always would volunteer in the mornings and then usually have some fill-in shift here somewhere and do that. And then I kind of have a Friendsgiving sort of thing.
Wherever. Okay.
And there's a great thing that my friend does that I have started doing, and that is when you're going to someone's house, you always say, what do you say? What can I bring? Right. And then you end up with like 5 people bringing salad or 12 people bringing wine. And you're like, I'm not going to go throw this.
I bring the pop.
Here's what you say. Right. Bring the mixers. You're always the hero.
Yep.
My friend does this beautiful thing. She says, bring a family recipe that you'd like to share with us and tell us the story of it. And then you end up with these beautiful stories of like, well, this is silly, but, you know, my grandma always wanted this godforsaken Jell-O salad with, you know, weird stuff in it. I mean, which is how I ended up with a Jell-O salad with crunched pretzels, strawberries, and marshmallows in my kitchen one year. And it was
good?
You know what? Actually, it was, because it was like sweet and salty, and you know, it was good. But she told this beautiful story of like her grandmother really loved this and never had Jell-O, and so once she discovered it, she wanted Jell-O and everything because she thought it was delicious. And her grandma was like real cute and kind of childlike and sweet and funny, and it brought a tear to her eye to tell the story and remember her grandmother. So I was like, that's really sweet. So anyway, if you've got a recipe that you like to add to the mix, 312-981-7200. I almost gave up my own phone number for a second. I was like, 773. No, that's not what we're doing. We're not calling my house what we're doing. We're calling WGN. That would have been a Thanksgiving I would not forget. Anyway, we're going to take a little break, continue this conversation on the other side, because I have an idea for a recipe I want to test out on you guys. All right, back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, it's Amy Guth with you until 12 o'clock doing the things. Here's my question to you, and we've got some callers. I want to talk to Alia's. My question is this. What is the thing that you have to have on the Thanksgiving table? Maybe it's an extra thing. Maybe it's a new take on something. I mean, I know somebody who brings tamales to the table because she's like, that's what I need. That's what I need that day.
I love that. I love need tamales.
She said, I need the food of my people at my table on Thanksgiving. And that's what she does. And it is delicious when you get to go to her house.
For me, it's baked macaroni and cheese and brown sugar glazed ham.
I'm with you on the brown sugar. I'm like, on ham. I love turkey. I love turkey. I think Joe might also. Hi, Joe. You're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's your Thanksgiving go-to?
It is, for all the turkey that's left over, it's a turkey pie. It's called turkey pie, but it's not really a pie. It's turkey gravy. You heat it until warm. You put it into a 9x13 pan and place it in the oven at 350 degrees until it's bubbling. And then you can place the baking powder biscuits on top of it.
Ooh.
And, or graham biscuits will work fine, but you got to split them because they're really thick. And then you can, and that's basically about it. Make sure that they're baked all the way through. It is a fantastic meal after Thanksgiving instead of just all the, you know, turkey sandwiches and everything.
Yeah. Oh, and that sounds good.
The story behind it is it was a desperation meal by my grandmother in 1956 or so. There were two men that came to her farm to cut the silage, and she found out about 7 p.m. that they had not had any dinner, and the only thing that she had to make was extra leftover turkeys and some biscuits. So she made this dish for them, and it's pretty much become a staple for us for Thanksgiving.
I love that. What was your grandmother's first name?
Evelyn.
Grandma Evelyn's turkey pie. It's a thing. I'm going to make it, Joe. That sounds so good. I'm ready to eat that right now. I love it. Well, thanks for the call. Happy Thanksgiving, Joe. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Same to you.
Thanks so much. All right, let us go to another Joe. Dr. Joe, hi. What is your Thanksgiving go-to?
How you doing, Alan? I'm in the car right now, so I hope you hear me well enough.
I hear you.
I make a bourbon sweet potatoes.
Ooh.
You take 4 ounces of butter, 4 ounces of brown sugar, 4 ounces of bourbon to make a sauce. You pre-cook your potatoes so that you can peel them and cut them into little hockey pucks, lay them on a grease pan, put the sauce over it, and in the oven for about 400 for about 30 minutes.
Oh.
And then on the top, a little some orange zest right before you serve it. It gives it a nice little flavor.
That sounds delicious. Okay, I want to make that too. That sounds so good. The orange zest, I bet, is awesome.
This is the recipe I originally picked out of a cookbook from Lynchburg, Tennessee. And the original recipe called for Jack Daniels, but any bourbon will do. So don't be particular there.
Oh, well, don't worry. I'm not particular about bourbon.
if I could bend your ear just for a second, I am really a doctor, and one of my patients is Santa Claus, and this Sunday, I am proud to say I'm one of his elves in the annual Toys for Tots motorcycle. We'll be leaving 83rd and Western about 9:15 in the morning. So warn people at Western Avenue, hopefully we'll be busy. We've had some years of 50,000 motorcycles for the parade.
Wow, that's so cool. Thanks so much for letting us know that, Joe. That's so cool. Where can people go to find out more about it? Just show up on Western Avenue.
Well, they can go to ChicagolandTFT.org is the website. And the price of admission is just a toy on the back of your motorcycle. Everyone's invited.
That's so cool. Thanks so much for letting us know about that. I'll be sure and tweet out that link so people can see that on Twitter. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate your time. Happy Thanksgiving.
God bless you, Adam.
Thanks so much.
Good day.
All right. Well, that's fun. Okay. I'm here for Grandma Evelyn's turkey pie, and I am definitely here for the bourbon sweet potatoes with orange zest.
I'm absolutely here for the sweet potatoes with the bourbon zest.
But I just want to recap that recipe. It's easy to remember. I wrote it down as he was talking. 4 ounces of bourbon, 4 ounces of butter, 4 ounces of brown sugar. And I'm like, whoa, that sounds like delicious.
Well, it's a lot of bourbon.
It's a lot of bourbon.
Maybe, I mean, you might need that for tomorrow. So
for my adventure, my first time in 21 years to be with my whole family.
Yeah, it could pay off.
My parents and my brother. Yeah, I might need that bourbon.
Good luck.
Oh, man, that's funny. Well, I appreciate all those calls and the tweets and the texts and all those good things about delicious things on your Thanksgiving table. I'm going to have to figure out a way. I'm going to make Grandma Evelyn's turkey pie. So thanks for Joe. And there's always sweet potatoes. You can't not have sweet potatoes. But I might have to douse a little bourbon and orange on them this year. That's a thing. Okay, well, I'm going to get busy writing a grocery list. We're going to go to break, get you to news, all that good stuff. On the other side of news, we're going to be talking with Dalton Barker from Crane's Chicago Business. He is going to be talking with us about the top food and beverage stories of 2019 and what he's going to be looking at in the year ahead. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN here in just a bit. I'm going to get you to news. On the other side of news, we're going to be talking about the big food and beverage stories of 2019, and we're going to be joined by Dalton Barker from Crane's Chicago Business, and we're going to be taking a look at what he's going to be watching in 2021. Because, you know, if you're covering stuff, you have a sense of what's coming up, of what's ahead, and what to be watching. So we're going to pick his brain a bit about that. I know we are definitely going to be talking about the chicken sandwich wars, because that was a thing for sure.
That was a major thing. I remember.
I've never seen the internet lose its mind over a chicken sandwich.
Yes. It was like, I don't even remember what kicked it off. It was like one person made this funny video on Twitter about how great the sandwich was. And then that went viral. So then they sold out within maybe a week. And people were just outraged that they didn't have the chicken sandwich anymore.
I know.
Then you had the argument over who else has a good chicken sandwich.
And then the Chick-fil-A people weighed in, the Popeyes people, it became a thing.
Chick-fil-A versus Popeyes.
And people got mad at McDonald's. Why don't you have a good chicken sandwich?
Absolutely.
Then Taco Bell recently made a chicken fried chicken thing.
Yeah, like so I don't trust that at all.
I don't trust that at all. Oh, and also Burger King made a taco. Do you remember that?
Yeah, definitely don't trust that either.
You do not go to Burger King for a taco. That's it. I have not had it. It might be delicious.
Yeah, I don't even go to Burger King. I feel like McDonald's is superior, but
well,
taste wise,
that's you know, that's a thing to watch because there's a lot of McDonald's news this year. I mean, we're ending this year with a new CEO in place at McDonald's, who, you know, happened overnight. I mean, lots of stuff. 720 WGN, Amy Guth here with you till 12 o'clock. You know, it is that time of year where we're talking lots of food things, and I thank you, those of you who called in with some your particular Thanksgiving traditions. I'm making both of those recipes that you shared with us. We're joined now by Dalton Barker, who is a reporter at Crain's Chicago Business, who literally sprinted over here. Lots of breaking news, lots of things happening today, busy day on the beat covering food and beverage in that world. So as we are looking back to 2019 and the big stories that you covered this year and the big stories ahead, there are so many. I feel like you barely got a chance to look up this year because there was so much coming at you.
It was true. That's why I had to get a little cardio in before Thanksgiving, you know.
That's right.
Burn some of that stuffing early.
That's right. Sprinting, literally sprinting over here to be with us on the radio today. So, you know, I made my little list here, but I'm curious about your list. What are those big stories when you think of 2019? I mean, immediately I go to Chicken Sandwich Wars. I go to all the changes with McDonald's and all the legal action around wage and sexual harassment allegations and things like that. And I go to all the plant-based proteins. It seems like everybody was getting in on those things.
Absolutely. I think that what you're seeing right now is, I have a story coming out later today about essentially the oversaturation of restaurants here in Chicago. And I think what the plant-based is kind of really trying to speak to is, how do we get people through the door? I think you've seen that with Burger King. Dunkin' Donuts now has a plant-based breakfast sandwich. I think whatever it is, it's like, how do we get more and more people through the door? And that's a challenge right now because they're similar to retail. There's just too many restaurants here in Chicago, but also nationwide. So trying to get people in the door, trying to make them customers, trying to keep them coming back over and over and over again. That's just a really big challenge for restaurants. And I think the plant-based thing is, hey, if we can get vegetarians or we can get vegans or we can get flexitarians, whatever gets them through the door, let's try it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting, though, that fast food picked that first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, usually we see things in, you know, higher end settings and then it kind of trickles down to fast food. But this has been, you know, as far as, you know, vegetarian options and plant-based meat, it is totally reverse of what we normally see, which is so interesting because here it started in fast food and still, you know, I'm not a vegetarian, but some of my good friends are, and they've even noted to me, you know, often the thing that you get at a restaurant is like the vegetable pasta.
Exactly. I think that what you're seeing, not only in, I think you're seeing this aggressively in kind of two different spots. Conagra has really bought into this idea of flexitarian. They're here in Chicago. So your consumer products companies, your Kraft Heinz or your Conagras, they're really pushing into the space, and fast food is also pushing aggressively into the space. And I think that's both because across the board, those areas are a little bit struggling to try to get a foothold of, hey, people basically ate similar foods from the end of World War II all the way up to sometime in the mid-2000s, late 2000s. So how do we get this next generation? How do we target the 20-year-old? How do we target the 29-year-old who maybe eats meat, you know, twice a week or three times a week, but they want some of those vegetarian or vegan options? How do we cater to those people and be relevant to them? And I think that that's really what the fast food and the consumer product companies are trying to get. They're trying to establish long-term relationships like they did after World War II with the mass movement to the suburbs and feeding people with those, you know, Kraft Kraft singles and this and that, you know, just your standard Happy Meal. It's starting to shift, and I think they want to be ahead of the curve to form those long-term relationships with the customer.
And it seems like food is doing what we saw manufactured goods do just a couple of years ago, right? Suddenly it was less special to have a mass-produced item that, like, oh, look, I have the same couch my neighbor does. And it was more about, like, I have this special, you know, I mean, the word artisan was everywhere. I mean, it was even on bread bags. Like, everything was suddenly artisan. And we started kind of seeing that creep into food, I think. And that's maybe where we are in the dining experience end of that.
Exactly. I mean, if you think about it, you go to a McDonald's nowadays, right? You go to the kiosk, you order whatever sandwich you want. you have basically limitless abilities to customize that sandwich to exactly what you want. And I think what they're trying to say is, hey, we're going to let you kind of take the lead here about what you want to eat. Obviously, there's downsides to that too, because you have so much product specialization. You can't roll anything out because you can't have a million items for a million people, right? Mm-hmm. But it's having a little bit of flexibility on the product side, but also having the flexibility and saying, hey, vegans, vegetarians, you can eat this too, along with people that, hey, I'm just going to skip out meat for this day. I think you're really starting to see that. I think the big challenge will be, especially for a McDonald's of the world, how do we get the supply chain built out so that we can supply all of our stores? You saw that already this year with Popeyes. It took them 3 months to get the chicken sandwiches, which if you kind of look, which was very interesting, from the time a chicklet is born to when they're ready for processing is 90 days. They were basically offline for 3 months. So I don't know if that was exactly it, but that, I remember catching that and being like, oh, that's really interesting. Did they completely run out of their entire supply chain?
There's just no chickens.
Yeah, there's just no chicken to be found. Wow. And you got to think, Popeyes is...
They do much, chicken.
Yes, but
that's
they're
their thing.
Exactly. And they're much, much, much smaller than a McDonald's.
Yeah.
So I think if you're going to see McDonald's really move into this plant-based thing, which I've talked with some sources, they believe it's going to happen in 2020. They have a lot more stores. You're going to have to really have that supply chain built out, because if McDonald's rolls it out, we have a real big game changer.
Yeah. I mean, it will be interesting. I think you've reported this number before. It's what, 14,000 stores in the U.S.
Roughly,
or North
yep.
America?
Yep, in North America.
Yeah, so that's a lot. That's a lot to have to contend with. And then McDonald's they tested a plant-based meat in Canada.
And in Germany. Okay. So they've done two different locations. I think what they're trying to figure out is how do we kind of get the right menu, the right, you know, how do we assemble this and get it right? How does it work within the kitchen? I think that's another really big thing. Someone came out, I read a funny article, but a vegan group got really mad because they were cooking the plant-based burgers at Burger King, I believe, on the same grill that they cooked the meat. And it's like, well, these kitchens are not designed to have one grill for each different thing. It's a flat top grill. If you ever been to, you know, a diner, you know how it's all made. It's everything on the same thing. So I think McDonald's is trying to test this out in different markets internationally and trying to figure out, hey, how can we roll this out nationally? How can we really come into, when we roll this out, that it attracts a buzz, it gets people in the store, because that's really what you're doing, all these product innovations. How do we get more people through the door?
Mm-hmm. Which kind of leads to another story I feel like that we talked about a lot this year, and that was the Grubhub and the Uber Eats and all of those food delivery services and apps. Such a big conversation there, kind of culminating in just this week, the New York City Council saying, all right, get it together.
Yeah, I think that this is a really hard business model. And I think that I've read some really interesting articles about essentially all the people my age, which I'm 29, so I'm right in that millennial group, has been really basically subsidized by venture capitalists. You know, your Grubhubs, your Uber that you take, some of the different services, Instacart, all these different things really don't make money. And there's really not a moat.
That's,
you know,
an interesting point.
Warren Buffett always talks about, you know, building a moat around your business, right? Well, having someone pick up food and deliver it somewhere else, that's not a new business model. Having an app around it or having something, that's not a new, you know, I mean, the app is one thing. But as you can see, all these DoorDash, Uber Eats, they all have pretty good apps. They all work pretty well. And so a lot of this business model has been subsidized. So my biggest thing that I'm curious about is what happens when the subsidization ends and all of a sudden the $3 or $4 delivery fee goes up to $11 or $10 or whatever it is to break even on that marginal unit. And I think that's a really big question. And you've already seen Grubhub come out, say, oh, this is a really tough business model. It's like, yes, it is.
Oh, they all but admitted a couple of weeks ago, like, this is not working.
I love the word. I don't want to misquote this, but I believe they use the word promiscuous users.
That's right. Promiscuous
and I really like that because, like, you know, and I admit, you know, when I go up to an Uber or Lyft, you know what I pull up both apps. I look at whichever way I'm going, the same spot, which one ever is cheaper. I choose that one. It's that simple.
Right.
And I think that all these different delivery services are realizing that too. It's not like you're just using DoorDash or just using Uber Eats or just using Grubhub. It's like, what's the one that has the best options and what I want for that night and what's going to deliver it the cheapest?
And the fastest. Like, yes. if Grubhub's got a 2-hour wait and this one can give me this in 15 minutes, I'm going there.
Absolutely.
That's worth $2 extra to me. Right?
Exactly.
So there's that. I mean, I've got my own issues with delivery because I feel bad. I'll just like, I'll go get it. It's fine. I feel bad. Yeah. So there's that. I think the other interesting part of Grubhub in particular is they're saying, hey, we spend all this money to market your restaurant for you. We're getting people in the door. And then here comes the New York City Council with this data saying, that's not accurate. You're less likely to go to the restaurant if you know they have app service delivery.
Yeah, and I don't know if I've seen any hard data on this, but if you're always, you know, getting delivery from, you know, 4 or 5 different spots, are you a real regular to those spots in terms of, if you're a regular of a, you know, we've always known this idea that, you know, restaurant industry kind of thrives on the people that come in basically Monday through Thursday, right? The weekends, you know, most restaurants can fill up on the Thursday nights, the Fridays, the Saturdays. But it's during that midweek and you bring in customers. And a lot of the times that's regulars that are coming in there kind of fueling that cash flow.
Sure.
But are you a regular if you just pull up, I want Indian food tonight, or I want pizza, right, and you're just looking at the, what's the lowest price and what's the fastest? Like you said, I'm really hungry right now. I want the pizza in 20 minutes. Can I get into it? There's 10 different options. They all probably have decent ratings. I'll just pick one.
I think it'd be really interesting in the year or two ahead to look at how that shifts, because I think a shift is badly needed. You know, we saw that touch a lot of parts of this business. I mean, McDonald's kind of laid off of franchisees a little, saying, okay, you don't have to use Uber Eats. You can kind of make your own deal. We've seen restaurants push back and saying, hey, upwards of 33% of our commissions, that's a lot to be paying. We're already in a low margin business. You know, we've seen data privacy issues even. We've seen restaurants saying, hey, you're routing calls to your call center instead of us. Like, I think there's just a lot of pieces there, even into like Open Table for reservations, of people kind of saying, well, we've got your data. Do you have to keep working with us to saying that to restaurant owners?
I think the big question, the gig economy, is can you make money doing this?
Indeed.
And we have not seen any of these, for the most part, we've not seen the Ubers actually turn a profit. And granted, it looks like public markets are giving them a chance to do that. But I think that will be the big question moving forward.
I agree. And I think SoftBank, you know, here's this Uber backer and WeWork, and we saw how those two things went. So it'll be really interesting. We're talking with Dalton Barker. He is a reporter at Crain's Chicago Business, about the top food and beverage stories of 2019 and looking ahead to the big stories he's going to be watching in 2020. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. Amy Guth here with you until 12 o'clock. We've got lots more stuff coming up for you later in the day, of course. But we are joined right now by Dalton Barker, who is in studio with us. He reports on many things over at Crain's Chicago Business, one of those things being the food and beverage industry, which has been a big year for that. We've talked a little bit about the chicken sandwich wars. We've talked a bit about McDonald's and, of course, food delivery. And, you know, I think a piece of that we didn't touch on with food delivery was also a thing we saw this year was kind of the virtual restaurant of we're only going to deliver from this restaurant, but we won't have a physical location, which is kind of an interesting new thing. We even saw Let Us Entertain You kind of dabbling in that space.
Exactly. I think that what you're seeing is there's a lot of cost constraints in the restaurant industry right now, from higher labor costs, higher food costs, higher rent costs, particularly here in Chicago, that's unique to us, higher property taxes talks, property taxes, which gets translated down into higher rents. And if you really look at a lot of the, I find it really fascinating that if you look at a lot of the restaurants, everybody knows about the Fulton Markets, the Streeterville's, the River North's, right? Look at where Parachute's at, Avondale. Look at where a lot of these new restaurants are at, Logan Square. Logan Square is basically becoming the second Fulton Market. Well, Logan Square is still much, much, much more affordable than the Fulton Markets. And I think what you're seeing with the virtual restaurant model is, hey, delivery is costing us. Operating a dining room is costing us with the labor. So we can build a virtual restaurant in a cheaper part of town and just deliver here and just have different restaurant model or different restaurant options. You know, we can do pizza here. We can do sushi here. We can do pasta here. And we can operate it in a cheaper part of town and then deliver. It's not like anyone's any wiser than that.
Yeah.
It's as long as the food's good and it's quality, it comes warm and it comes on time, people are happy with that. And I think it's a way for a lot of these different, I think lettuce is going into this. Some of the different operators are looking into this because it's a way to, hey, how do we get into this delivery space, but how do we get into it and still make money and make a good margin that we're used to in a more traditional restaurant. And so I think that the virtual restaurants, you've seen this, it's getting really big out in San Francisco because of a lot of their problems that everyone knows about it with rent costs and, sure, and labor costs. And I think you're going to start seeing this more and more. I just saw a statistic the other day that I have in a story coming out later today. Since 2014 till now, the employment, the restaurant employment figures here in Chicago, the number of people employed in restaurants and bars has gone up by 30%.
Wow.
Yes.
That's
so significant. Okay. And we also nationally are now, you know, at sub 4% unemployment. We also have minimum wage here in Chicago going up. All these different factors are making it harder and harder to run restaurants, right? And there's multiple people I've got on and off the record saying, you know, it's difficult to run a restaurant these days. And there's a lot of challenges. There's a lot of things that are getting squeezed. And I think that the virtual restaurant thing is most likely here to stay, especially if delivery continues to grow with people, you know, under 35.
Sure. Yeah. And you and I talked about this recently on Crane's Daily, just about just how hard it is and how small those, surprisingly small, the margins are when you're running a restaurant.
3 to 5%.
I mean, that's 3 to 5%. You think about, oh, this person owns a restaurant, this big glamorous money. No. It's hard work.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm from a restaurant family. I know.
Exactly. And I mean, we talk about all the time about, like we've talked about with Mariano's, it's, you know, your traditional grocery store is 1 to 3%. So 3 to 5, I mean, this is not, you know, 25 to 30% margins on these things where, you know, and I think that maybe whatever it is, people think that the restaurant life is this high life. And
people think that about journalism too, to be fair.
Yeah, I don't know who thinks that.
Jokes on them. Yeah. I know, I'm like, you're welcome to look at my W-2 and laugh all the way. Indeed. Well, okay, you brought up another thing that I definitely am going to be watching in 2020, and that is Mariano's. You've reported a lot on that. They now, Kroger is their parent company. A lot of people pushed back saying, hey, I kind of liked walking around my grocery store with the wine glass. Now it's not the same. It's not the same place. I miss that Olive Bar. I miss the things.
Yeah, and when you really look at Kroger's, and we don't really know exactly how Kroger's will continue to influence not only Mariano's, but Roundy's and all its other subsidiaries stores. But here's just the facts. The facts are Kroger's is struggling. Kroger's just launched a national ad campaign with DDBO, which is their very first outside marketing group that they've ever used in their history. And I forget
which to me is a big tell.
It's a massive tell. It's a massive tell. It's saying what we're doing in-house is not working. We got to go somewhere else. We need something fresh. And this is a national ad campaign. And I believe the company, off the top of my head, it was established in Cincinnati sometime in the late 19th century. So to go through the whole 20th century almost 20 years into the 21st century, and you've never had really outside help for advertising, and now you're bringing in, like you said, it's a big tale.
That's a big tale. All right. Well, lots of things. Everybody, follow Dalton Barker at Crane's Chicago Business and on social media. And, of course, for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I'm going to tweet out links to all the things that we talked about. I have to remember all the things we talked about. We covered a lot of ground. But, indeed, lots of food stories this past year. And I think no rest for you this year because there's just tons more already happening. Big stories. McDonald's, Mariano's, all that stuff. Lots and lots. So rest a lot tomorrow. I think there's a big 2020 ahead. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Amy.